April is National Bilingual and Multilingual Learner Advocacy Month. That's why we're so excited to tell you about a new special series from Science of Reading the podcast that will launch later this month. Over several episodes, we'll talk to leading researchers and practitioners about how the science of reading serves multilingual and English learners, and how to best use the science of reading to support those students in the classroom. That's all starting at the end of this month. Stay tuned to this feed for more.
I just wish somebody really kind of sat with me and told me that I wasn't stupid and that I was okay.
This is Susan Lambert, and welcome to Science of Reading, the podcast from Amplify, where the science of reading lives. We're just 1 week away from launching our brand new eighth season. But first, we have one more very special episode for you.
So when was it that you actually discovered and something was named that you had dyslexia? How did you come to that realization?
When I was incarcerated.
You being locked up, you know, to get tested then and get your AA then, it shouldn't take all that for a kid to get what they need. It shouldn't take having to go to jail to get what you need to learn how to read. That's the bottom line of it.
It makes me sad that like somebody so close to me, one of my own family members, had to go through that as well.
October is Dyslexia Awareness Month, and today we welcome back one of our celebrity guests, Kareem Weaver. Kareem is a co-founder and executive director of the organization Fulcrum. Full and complete reading is a universal mandate. He's also the Oakland NAACP's second vice president and chair of its education committee. He joined this podcast way back on season 4 and again for our first ever live recording at the Plain Talk Conference.
This documentary is sort of built around your story. How did this happen?
I don't know. I really don't know.
But this time around, Kareem won't be joining us by himself. He's being joined by two people very close to him, his nephew Elijah, and his daughter, Margaret Malaika Weaver. Especially as Dyslexia Awareness Month gets underway, I think you'll be moved by these two young people's stories. One quick note, if you stick around to the very end, you'll get a special sneak preview of what's to come on season 8 of the podcast. But first, let's dive into this conversation, beginning with Kareem. Kareem Weaver. You're back with us.
Hey, I'm back again. What's good?
For another episode. What's up?
Hey, it's been a minute.
Yeah. I'd like to start with you, actually, to talk to you a little bit about this episode that we're just going to get into. And first of all, our listeners know who you are, right? So we don't even have to introduce you. And we'll do some of that introduction in the intro anyway, Kareem. Sure. But why do you think it's so important for people to hear this particular story?
I think it's the butterflies in my stomach. It's the things that we don't often talk about the impact of families on young people. Sometimes we have these conversations that are ideological or theoretical, and we don't get into the weeds about the real life impact of how this stuff rolls in and out of our young people. And I think that's divorced from all this type of stuff, and it shouldn't be. We got to plug into the real deal. And that also means that, you know, we got to be vulnerable enough to share, which is not easy to do. So that's why I'm so grateful that they were willing to join us for this. And I think that's the reason why it needs to happen, is because, you know, we can't just be talking about stuff in our heads. If it's all in the head, it's probably a lie. The heart got to be in there too, you know? So yeah. That's why bringing these young people out and letting them tell their stories and talking to them, I think is really, really important.
Yeah, I agree with you. So we have with us your daughter and your nephew, and these are two kids that you've seen grow up. What do you remember about these two when they were young?
Where do I start? I'll start with Elijah. Elijah is the same age as my oldest daughter, Zena. They're like a couple months apart or something like that. December and August. So I remember growing up, you know, every family, you're not supposed to have favorites. You're not supposed to have favorites. Right? That's officially what all parents say. I don't have favorites, man. I think my brother probably got kind of broke that because Elijah was always his favorite. I remember he came to live with us for a while. Him and his brother came to live with us for a while. And I remember them going through a lot of stuff. And I remember how intelligence, I remember the grit, the determination. I remember the kindness, the sense of humor. I remember a lot. And for Margot, oh gosh, you know, I remember her being a pain in the neck. I'm just playing with you. No, I'm playing with you. I just, you know, she's a baby of the house. She's the last one out the door. So, you know, we had the benefit of hindsight from her older sister and her older brother. And I remember thinking to myself, I better do something so that I don't make, so that I learn from the past. So I think she was a beneficiary of some of the hard learned lessons that our family had to, deal with. So I love them both, and I'm glad that they're, I could go on and on, but you know, I know it's not about me today. So
yeah, it's not about you today. That's right. Yeah. Margo, do you want to say hi to our listeners? Just introduce yourself real quick.
Hello. My name is Margaret Malika Weaver, but you can just call me Margo. I am going to Bowie State University this year. I'm an incoming freshman. I'm very excited about that.
It's great.
I'll also be playing softball for them because that's something I'm very passionate about. I've been doing that my whole life. And I'm also an artist. I like to do art. That's what I'm passionate about. And I want to make a career out of that. So, yeah.
That's exciting. Great. Thanks for that introduction. Elijah, your turn.
I'm Elijah, 26. I'm not going to school right now. I was. I do have my AA in sociology.
That's awesome.
Right now I work full time and yeah.
Great. Thanks for introducing yourself. Margo, we're gonna start with you and hear a little bit about your story. How about when you remember learning how to read? Do you remember way back, I know a long time ago, asking you to like bring forth memories from the past, but what do you remember about learning how to read?
What I remember is my parents, they're the ones who really taught me how to read. And so I remember my dad used to record all the little learning sessions we would have in the house. And he would write sentences on a whiteboard. We'd have to sound them out. Stuff like that. I don't have like exact memories of it, but from those videos, that's what I recall. So he would teach us how to read. We'd have different learning programs. Dad, what were they called? The little
Turbo Twist.
We would have Turbo Twist, and we were forced to do those all the time. And so that was my source of fun as a kid. We would have these books in the house that have like really big letters in them. I loved those. It made reading a lot more easier. But growing up, they're the ones who taught me how to read, and from that, I thought it was really cool and really fun. But it was only until like I entered school where it kind of went downhill for me. And my kind of viewpoint on reading shifted a lot. So
what happened?
It wasn't fun anymore. I wasn't taught properly how to read. I was forced to memorize a lot of my words, which caused me to it just made it frustrating. And it was always harder for me to retain information and constantly memorize it. And so being forced to memorize words that I didn't know the meanings of them. I'm just looking at random syllables on a piece of paper all the time. And it just got frustrating for me. So then now we're forced to read a certain book in class. I don't like what the book's about. It's too long. I don't understand what's going on. Now I'm not even reading the book. I'm just staring at the pages. It was dreadful the whole time. And so reading became stressful and it felt like a chore to me. So I didn't like it at all. I'm just now regaining that love for reading. So
that's awesome. That's great. Yeah. What about the kids around you? Did you notice things about what they were doing? Did you compare yourself to what they were doing?
I definitely compared myself to the other kids in class because nobody from what I knew presented like they were struggling with reading. So I felt like it was just me. And I don't think I was struggling so much to where I was like, oh, there's a problem with me, or I need immediate help. It was just more like I was one of the lower people in class. So it wasn't like a huge red flag waving in your face like, oh, there's a problem with her. So I kind of slowly fell behind the other classmates of mine. And I remember that we would have different reading tests in class. So the whole classroom would be quiet and you'd be pulled aside with the teacher and you're supposed to read a certain book. And depending on how well you read that book in front of everybody, you got like a little yellow star or a gold star, or whatever it was. And I remember each time I'd stutter on my words, I wouldn't know what was happening. And the teacher would be like, oh, well, you didn't do too good today. So we're just going to have to keep you behind. And that was embarrassing.
Ouch.
So I felt like I was the only one who was really struggling with it.
Did you feel like you weren't just working hard enough? Did you feel like, what was that feeling for you?
I felt like I was working hard. Well, as hard as I could for like elementary school student.
Right.
And I think after a while, when people around me told me that I wasn't working hard enough, I started to believe that like what I was giving out, what my best was, wasn't good enough. And so then I started to slowly not give my best, because why would I give my best if it's not going to be good enough for you? Mm. So I just kind of slowly didn't care anymore about how I performed in school.
Hmm. Yeah. Did that impact like other parts of school too? So it wasn't just like the reading time, it was maybe all school?
Absolutely. I think once I hit middle school was when it really kind of like slapped me in the face, because that's when we're all hitting puberty and everyone's trying to make their little friend groups. And my self-confidence totally just dropped once I hit sixth and seventh grade. And so by that point, I really didn't have any friends. I had probably one or two people I'd hang out with, but there was nobody really there supporting me on like an actual kid level. Mm-hmm. And I would end up literally eating lunch alone in the bathrooms by myself, because I isolated myself so much. So I didn't have anyone to go to. Mm-hmm. At home, I think I was pretty okay, but it just, like, as soon as my parents would talk about school, like, oh, how was your day at school? What's going on in school? What's your work looking at? I just completely shut down. So anything that had to do with school, I would completely, like, my brain would start twitching. Like, I didn't like it at all. It just grossed me out. I didn't like it.
Mm-hmm. Were you ever able to talk to your parents about it? Like, I'm struggling to read, or I don't like school because of this, or you just couldn't put words to it?
I probably couldn't put the best words to it, because I do struggle with explaining myself sometimes. And I'm sure I've probably expressed to them that, like, I've definitely expressed that I don't like school. Like, I don't like school. I don't want to be there. I'd rather be homeschooled, something like that. But I think actually explaining to them what's going on, I never really did that. And so I can't really blame them for that, because I didn't really go into depth and tell them how I was feeling and what was going on. I think it was only until high school when I started to like really try my best to explain, like, hey, something's not right. I don't like it here. I'm not learning anything. I don't feel benefited. Help me. Like, so I don't think that ever happened earlier on in my life.
Mm-hmm. You said that like you've been playing softball for a really long time. How does softball fit into this story?
Softball. Oh, I love softball. Softball was definitely an outlet for me to express myself, because again, like at school, I didn't really have like a close-knit pot of people that I was running with. But for softball, I had like a solid team of 13, 14 girls. We all know each other. We're all supporting each other. Academically, socially, like it's a family-based community, and I loved it so much, no matter what team I was on. It really kept me going, honestly. Like, mm-hmm. I think it was my sophomore year. That was when my parents were like, you're not doing too good in school. Something's wrong. Maybe it's because you're doing softball that's distracting you. And they went to my high school counselor. And they're like, yeah, we're thinking about pulling her from softball. And my counselor was like, no, let's not do that. Because this is something she really enjoys. And it's important for people to have an outlet to go to when they're really, you know, stressed. And I'm so happy that they did not pull me from softball, because I needed it so much. Because it forced me to, I was good at something. I was really good at something. I was passionate about it. And being able to perform at 100% and being encouraged in a positive way, I think really helped me. So I needed that.
Hmm. At what point did you realize that you needed help with this whole reading, writing thing? Was it that at that point when they went to the school and said, we're thinking of pulling her from softball? How did that all evolve?
I think I always knew I needed help. I just kind of struggled with asking for help because I didn't want to admit that I was as far behind as I was. And it was kind of embarrassing. Like, I have my siblings who are doing great in school and they're succeeding. And then here I am, like, the one person in the family who kind of sucks, and I didn't want to admit it. But I think when they were talking about switching schools and they're saying, maybe we need to pull you from St. Mary's, maybe we need to take you out of softball. And they were like, oh, now we need to get you tested. I'm like, okay, maybe this is really an issue. And then that's when I started to kind of like let down my guard a little bit. And I was like, yeah, I kind of need help. I probably need tutoring. Help me, kind of thing. So I think it was later on in high school when I wouldn't even say that like I humbled myself a little bit. I felt more open to asking for help from people.
So you said you got tested. Tell me a little bit about that, what that experience was like, and then, you know, sort of the results, what it felt like to get some results of that.
Oh my goodness. when I got tested, I think it was like a 2-3 week process. It was long. It was probably like a solid 3 hours straight of testing where they would take me through different sections like reading, writing, math, different puzzle equations. I'd have to read certain phrases backwards and I'd have to repeat it. There's memorization tests, but it was so long and I wouldn't get a break. And so after every single session, I'd be absolutely wiped. I think I'd sleep the whole ride home in the car. I was absolutely exhausted. But the lady was really nice who was testing me. And I think at the end of my time, when I got, it was like this 36 page report on how my brain works, what I'm good at, what I'm not so good at, how I retain information, what's going to be best for me in school. Teachers need to know this about me. You need to know this about her, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And they didn't just test like reading, writing and stuff. They were also testing like behavioral issues as well. And so I also have ADHD and they were watching literally every move that I did. Like there was a baby crying in the other room one time. And in the report, it was talking about how I was hyper-focused on one of these puzzle pieces that I was trying to figure out and that I didn't pay attention to the ambulance behind me, the baby in the other room, her trying to make small talk with me. Like it was a full in-depth report on my behavior and how I was responding to different situations. It was kind of scary at first, but it was really cool to see. And I think after I got the report, my parents immediately went down to the counseling center, handed the counselor my report, and they put accommodations set in place for me. And it just felt like a weight was lifted off my shoulders when it was like, you have dyslexia or stealth dyslexia, and you also have ADHD. And I'm like, oh, it's all making sense now. This is crazy. Yeah. It really did feel like a weight was lifted off my shoulders because it made me realize like I wasn't the problem. Like something wasn't wrong with me. I just had a little, you know, bump in the road that was, you know, making it just a little bit harder for me. It was nice.
Did you get any affirmations from that report about other things? I mean, were there other things from that report that you heard that you're like, oh, that's cool?
They said I was superior in making 3D models in my brain. So I'm good at imagining things and then kind of like putting it into action, which kind of works perfectly on how I do art and stuff.
Yeah.
They basically were saying I'm very, very, very creative. And there's a bunch of other things I just forget, but I remember that one because I read it and I was like, ha ha, I'm superior. So like, whoo.
So Kareem, you've lived with Margo, through Margo's story. How do you respond to what you're hearing?
Man. Well, first of all, kids going through this, it just was a reminder that the whole family experiences it. And we may not know all the details of what's going on, but it's painful having your kids struggle. She was talking, and a few things came. First of all, I started to get mad all over again. You know, I thought I was kind of through that stuff. But when you hear about your kid struggling and how the system works and doesn't work and things you did and didn't do, you know, it's rough. It's rough. So that's the first thing I'm feeling. The second thing is, I feel like, because I'm a teacher, I was a teacher for a long time and a principal. My wife was an educator, and I feel like we got hustled. I feel like we got bamboozled because, you know, you always hear about this parent involvement. Give the parents more involvement. Get the parents to do this. So I'm sitting here thinking, did we mess her up by helping her so much? I mean, we taught her how to read. She was reading good when she went in. We had to do kindergarten twice, once at the little Christian preschool treehouse, and then again in the public school. So she did, it was kindergarten twice. She did preschool at the treehouse and then kindergarten there, and then we transferred her to the district. So she was ready on top of ready.
Yeah.
And so that's why we kind of, like, I was like, okay, we good. We got her ready. She set up for success like all the rest of ones. She loves to read. Loved to read. Matter of fact, in the Right to Read movie, she's the kid. Margo was the kid that turned to the camera and says, I love it. She loved it. Mm-hmm. And the stuff they started doing with her, you know, and look, this is my shame. I stopped paying attention. I figured I did my job. I got her ready to go to school. Now gone. You know, go pay attention, do your lessons, and it's good. Now realizing that the stuff they was teaching her made her go backwards. And that right there, you know, I might be careful. Pastor might hear this, but listen, ain't nothing nice. I ain't got too much nice to say about that. Mm-hmm. And I feel like because she was so ready, they didn't catch the issues. So the parent engagement that we had, all the parental involvement, actually worked against her, I feel like, because maybe if she came in and she couldn't read or wasn't picking stuff up right away, they'd have found it. But instead, it was like, oh, she's all right. She's ahead. Oh, she's not ahead, but she's still solid. Oh, by the time it got on their alarm, you know, we can get into the expectations for different kids. A little black girl in school, she can read. What's the problem? And we sitting there saying, man, she's been reading. What y'all doing? She been reading. She came in reading. But what you doing is making her go backwards. I mean, it would take Margo to explain how they was teaching you, or Elijah, how they were teaching you, like, you know, what they were doing, the whole MSV, guess the letters, the words, the sounds, the mean, whatever, all that stuff, the context clues, all that stuff. Man, they just about shanked my daughter. Hmm. They just about shanked her with all the love, all the best intentions. They basically took her dreams and just shanked them. And anyway, and by the time I came in third grade down to the school, now I'm mad. I'm woofing, huffing, and puffing. So, you know, I didn't have a stay away order, but it was dang near close, because I'm trying to get them to understand it's serious. And they're steadily telling me how sweet she is, how kind she is. Oh, everybody loves Margo. Oh, just give her more time. She just needs more time. Kids develop at different rates. And maybe you're this is the one that got me. You know, every parent believes their kid is in the top 1%.
Yeah.
So I understand, but she's in a normal range. They basically was telling me, you think too much of your child. That's basically what they was telling me. And I'm like, y'all don't get it. She started off here and she's going backwards. I couldn't tell them people nothing. So they end up, my wife was the one that had to talk to them, because I couldn't talk to them. They were just spinning me around. You know, then the culture and class and race stuff got involved, and, you know, angry black man, all this type of stuff. I'm like, man, y'all quit playing with my kid. So there's that. And I don't think she realizes what was going on. She just going to school. On the softball tip, you know, I probably have told her this before. I don't know. But that softball, I mean, it'd take her to tell you. The reason why I got her involved in softball was because what happened to my older daughter, her sister. I was so busy teaching that, you know, me and her mother fell out. And her mother was like, I'm out. You ain't even around half the time. You teaching all night long, all day, all this. And so, you know, that was a wound that was still fresh. And so I was like, I'm not going to let that happen again. I got to stay plugged in to my family. And so I did softball with her so that I wouldn't just float away, planning lessons and doing whatever. That was a hard, hard won, hard earned lesson. And so softball, you got to be at practice. If I'm coaching, I can't just not show up. Kids going to be there. So that's why I got her involved in that, just so that I would have to get out the building. I would have to start doing things. And it didn't solve everything, but it allowed me to, I don't know, at least not, I mean, teachers, man, they give it a lot, educators, period. And so it allowed me to at least stay plugged in enough. I'm not sure it was enough, but it was more than I would have been otherwise. And then now she like all state twice in a row and, you know, doing her thing and home run hitter, all this type of stuff. But I was just doing it to keep myself from messing up as a dad. And if it wasn't for that, it would have been the same thing all over again. So, I mean, it's a lot of lessons, man. But it's tough to hear. And people think dyslexia is a white thing. That's the other thing. Like this never came. I kept saying something's happening.
Yeah.
Dyslexia was never on anybody's, but they wouldn't test her. Yeah. I wrote letters to the school district. She was at the unified school district, wrote letters to the district, all this type of stuff. They spun us around. And finally we put her in a private Catholic school. I'm not Catholic, but we got to do something. I don't know what to do. She hates school. And we still didn't know what it was. So I hear her saying this stuff. And it's like, man, that was our desperation move. And I'm ashamed to say, I'm absolutely ashamed to say, I tried to pull her out of softball because I didn't know what else to do. I thought maybe she was just not working hard enough.
Right.
You know, I mean, I knew she was working. I would sit by her in the library when she did her work. All right. I was like, no, you're going to do this math. You're going to do this. Not realizing it was taking forever. It's not that she couldn't read. It just took forever. And it was like nails on a chalkboard, you know, but she could do it. So I'm thinking, if you could do it, doggone it. And in the doing, it got more frustrating for her, and her grades were, she was trying to stay eligible. It was a hot mess. But so it came to a point where we were like, I'm sitting here with her and she gets stuff, but it's taking her a long time, a real long time. And so they thinking it's 30 minutes of homework. That 30 minutes in that math class is like an hour and a half. Multiply that by five every day, 5 days a week, what you're supposed to do. So she was just tapping out. And I was like, I don't even, it was a trip.
When that diagnosis came of dyslexia and ADHD, how was that for you? What did that feel like as a parent?
It was manna from heaven. It was manna from heaven. Because we just wanted answers. We just wanted answers and to know what's going on. Because I know she's brilliant. I know she's smart. I've been knowing that. They didn't tell me that. I knew that. Yeah. Right. But I'm looking at these grades. I mean, when you got two parents that are educators, you're not just going to drop out of school, right? We're not going to let you drop out of school, but it's more than one way to drop out of school.
That's right. Yep.
So she was there, but you know, her mind, her heart wasn't there. And she was just doing time. She was doing time in school, doing time. You know, we talk about the school to prison pipeline. A lot of kids in school, in prison.
Right.
They just doing time. You know, so that diagnosis was very helpful. And then Black folks, we got a stigma around special ed, a lot of us, because the historical implications of special ed. They put the Black kids in there. You know, this is a historical thing. And my family done been through this. And so a lot of times, especially after segregation, like Black kids would get warehoused in special ed. Yeah, I'm sure your listeners know what I'm talking about. And so like, I don't want her to go to special ed. So don't give me no label.
Right.
But a lot of times that's for behavior.
Right.
Right. But they're not really looking at the academics that they should have had before so that the behavior wouldn't even been a factor. So I was not happy about this whole special ed thing. But by that time I was like, oh, that's what's going on. And I felt guilty. I felt shame. I felt bad as a father. I felt like, you know, how could I not see this? I'm a teacher of the year. I'm like Mr. Teacher.
Yeah.
Like we go places around town. Mr. Weaver. Hey, Mr. Weaver, that's the dude. Da-da-da-da-da. And my own kid, it's like the fire truck going to a fire scale fire and your truck bust down in flames and you broke down on the side of the road. That's how I felt going to save everybody else's kids. So that's why, man, it's a whole lot of feelings with this. Margo, I apologize, baby girl, for not, you know, being what you needed me to be at that time in the right space. I love you. And I'm so glad that you persevered. And I'm sorry you had to go through that. Hopefully it built some character. And I mean, real talk. as a parent, we got to own up to stuff. Sometimes you can be too busy, you know, district giving me awards. I was principal. I won an award in Oakland for being a principal of our region, like all that. Okay. And I did what had to be done there, but at home, social justice starts at home. And so my daughter was dependent on me, and thank God for that counselor, Miss, Miss Mack. Miss Mack stepped in because I was like, you know, I'm old school. No, take the softball. That's what she liked. Take away the art. Take away the softball. You're going to focus on these books. That's what we know. Old school. She is like, nah. Hold, slow your roll. That's the only thing she got going that she loves to do. How are you going to take that from her? And I think about schools all dry. They don't have no art program. They don't have no sports programs. All these schools are bare bones. They take all the stuff that might be the thing the kid is hanging on to.
That's right.
You know, so, yeah, it's all kind of feelings about that. But I'm just real proud of her.
Margo, how do you feel about that apology and all that pride that's coming from your dad?
Appreciate it. Thank you, Dad. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I feel good. I feel good now. I mean, I feel like I probably would have had a bigger impact when I was a little younger, but you know, I appreciate it. Thank you. Yeah.
And for our listeners, I'm sitting here looking at this young lady who is going off to college, who is all-star softball, and it's pretty amazing, Margo. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And let me say this to all those universities that came late to the party recruiting her, I just want to laugh in your face.
Coming from a father.
Hey, listen, she 2-time All-State MVP of the league, a baller, but because of her grades, they was like, yeah, I don't know. You know, then she got the diagnosis and they got the accommodations. Yeah. And all of a sudden, she was bringing home straight A report cards.
Yep.
Then all of a sudden, we had this guy help us to get recruited and stuff. But then all of a sudden they started hitting us up. Then all of a sudden they want to email. Before that, man, it was nothing. They was like, well, we, you know, what can we do? Right. You know, they didn't believe in her. The school that she chose, they stuck by her. They believed in her. And that's what feels so good. In addition to that, they have the major and they love the team and the coach and the school and all type of stuff. Right. They believed in her. And I'm glad to be able to send my kids somewhere where they actually believe in her. That's my big thing. You know what I mean?
Yep. Shout out. That's awesome. Well, Elijah, we're going to turn to you in just a second. So I'm giving you a heads up to know that we're coming to you. But Kareem, one thing that I want to say to you is thanks for sharing that story because, well, I'm a parent of a kid with dyslexia. I was also a teacher and a principal. And I think that just understanding the whole process of dyslexia and being able to be focused on it, that sometimes parents feel guilty and they're not educators. And so to those parents who aren't educators, don't feel bad. And also to those educators that are really trying to work through, identify and support and help. Sometimes teaching reading is a hard thing, right? And so to just, you know, don't be so hard on ourselves, focus on what we know is right, evidence-based practices, but also just know that you're doing hard work. So, I mean, I just think that for teachers that are listening, that story that you just told is going to, you know, really be supportive to them. So thank you for that.
So can I share one quick thing real quick
Please.
Before we switch things, you know, to the educators out there. So I pay good money for my ed program, Patton College. Now they're out of business now, Patton College, and went under. But, you know, I wasn't prepared. Nobody taught me about dyslexia.
Yeah.
I was flying blind. And, you know, I felt like I should have got a refund. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we had to do the research on my own to figure this stuff out. Now, I was applying what I did know how to do. Like I taught her how to read. I applied what I did learn following Marva Collins and her example, which is basically science of reading. I did that stuff and got her reading. But what I'm saying is for educators, two things. One, it's the in-service the pre-service stuff that we did, man, you got to shake that loose, shake it loose. I know they might've taught you to cue it up and split it up and all the rest of this stuff. I get it. But we losing kids like this because we're sticking to methods that just never had evidence of working, especially working for all kids.
That's right.
That's the first thing. The second thing is, and I'm just talking to educators, there has to be a season of grace where you know, the institutions get disconnected from the kids, but we can't. You know, the superintendent, the school board, the whoever, the publishers, they are, it's like they're all disconnected from the kids, but the teachers get connected to the kids. That's and right. When you, as an educator, see that this ain't working for all our kids, then it's on us. And we got to drag the rest of them with us. But that's why I say educators got to lead this, because I think everybody else is just flying blind. But we see the impact. We see, you know, she was actually going backwards. It's not just staying still. And no, it unraveled the way she was being taught balanced literacy. It unraveled her ability to read. And I think that's something that folks got to know. We're doing harm. And so I just want to say that, you know, these education prep programs got to get it together. But for teachers, we're the ones, we're the tip of the spear. We're the vanguard. So please, please, please don't let people spin you around and, you know, market you some stuff. Look at evidence of what works for kids and focus on that and get the support that you need.
Yeah. Great wise words from Kareem Weaver. Elijah, you've been very patient. Thank you for your patience. We're going to turn to you next, but I guess you're the older of the two, right? So what do you remember about learning to read when you were in school?
I remember doing popcorn reading and like I wasn't confident about it because like half of the time I didn't even know what was going on. I would like guess or like, you know, it was just embarrassing. So I hated reading. I hated popcorn reading. I still kind of hate reading, like doing the popcorn reading thing. I mean, it's got a lot better since then, but now it's like, I don't know, I'm just not comfortable with like reading out loud. You know what I'm saying?
Yep, I do. Do you remember? So Marco talked a lot about like when she was young, she liked books, she liked to read, and she felt pretty confident about it. Do you remember, do you have any memories from when you were really young about books and wanting to read or no?
So I know my mom, she used to always like take us to the library to get books and stuff. I would always pick like the picture books, the easy books that I could just know what's going on. But other than that, I didn't really like to mess with books or, you know, I still don't. I'd rather read off the phone. So.
So, well, first of all, let's talk a little bit about that popcorn reading. That's a common thing that we, you know, we hear it's like, oh my gosh, that's horrible. First of all, especially when you can't read, but what was school like for you generally?
I was just always off task and like goofy and like distracted because I didn't like understand or I didn't know like how to read. So I would basically like go to school and just like be zoned out or like, you know, be goofing off, be talking or just stuff like that.
Did anybody ever say, hey, maybe he doesn't know how to read. Maybe we should try to figure that out.
I want to say like in middle school, I had like a homeroom teacher and I think I was like in sixth or seven, one of the two. And basically like I had her for two classes. I had her in homeroom. So I had her in the beginning of the day and I had her at like towards the end of the day for PE. And I was good in her PE class, but it's like her homeroom, like they were telling me my grades and like we're going over like testing and scores like that. And like at first she was saying that I wasn't applying myself. And then like she started talking to other teachers and then they started like, I don't know, they came up with this thing. They felt like I should be tested because, first of all, I'm horrible in math. So it's not just reading, it's math as well. And they just thought that maybe it was other things that were going on at home. And as soon as like we were about to get like me tested, I stopped going to school. Like something happened at home and then I didn't go to school for like until I want to say eighth grade year. So then, it just got lost.
It just got lost.
Just got lost.
And when you say that you were goofy in class and got trouble class, was that distracting? Was that because you like?
Yeah, it was just my coping mechanism because I was kind of like embarrassed and stuff.
Did you ever think that you could maybe ask for help, or did you sort of like Margo didn't know how to ask?
Well, it was like both. I was embarrassed to ask for help. But then, like, when, you know, they pull us to the side and we, like, take our tests and things like that, like, it was hard. It was, still was hard, even when they were trying to, like, help me, because it's like they were expecting me to, like, be learning at everybody else's pace. You get what I'm saying? Like, if they caught the child before me and the child before me was reading well and whatever worked for them, it didn't work for me. Hmm. So then, like, I don't know, they felt like I wasn't applying myself.
Did you ever have the sense that, there's something wrong with me?
I think as I got a little bit older, yes, because I would actually try. I would actually, like, try really hard to, like, just get everything, you know, math, reading, and it just wasn't working out.
What were the kind of things that you did to try, especially when it came to reading?
Spent extra time, like, because, you know, when I was younger, like I said, my mom used to take us to the library and have us, like, practice reading and stuff. And I'm not going to lie, I didn't try at all. Like, I tried, but it was like, if I knew I couldn't do it, I wouldn't even, like, frustrate myself. So by then, as I started getting older, and, you know, like, you got to, like, I like to play basketball. And so basically to be on the team, you have to have a 2.0.
Okay.
My GPA was under a 2.0. So, like, I knew that I was going to get kicked off the team.
Okay.
If I didn't apply myself more. So I tried, but it came to a point where it just wasn't working. For reading, for math, it was just, like, it was horrible. And then that's when they started kind of seeing, like, you know, that I actually was applying myself, but it wasn't working. And then they just said, probably, like, I have a lot of stuff going on at home, which is affecting the way I learn and focus at school.
So it was always about either you not working hard enough or there's something going on at home. And it was never, maybe we need to teach him differently. Did you ever get the sense of, hey, wait a minute, maybe they're not teaching me the way that I need to be taught?
Sometimes I'd be like, maybe they going too fast, because, like, right when I'm like getting a tiny bit of a lesson, like, we already moved on to something else. And then, like, it's hard for me to, like, get caught up. You get what I'm saying? And now we taking these tests, these star tests, and it's like, I'm not going to, like, pass it. You know?
So when was it that you actually discovered And something was named that you had dyslexia? How did you come to that realization?
When I was incarcerated.
Tell me a little bit about that.
So I was in a youth authority prison in Camarillo, California. And basically, it's like co-ed. And we basically have all these different teachers. But everybody, like, I could be in there with, like, middle schoolers, high schoolers. And I probably was, like, a sophomore or freshman.
Okay.
I think I was like a going into sophomore. Well, basically, I was good on my credits, because when you're in, like, incarcerated, basically, as long as you're doing, like, they give us third grade packets. As long as we turn in all those packets and, like, we're doing, like, a packet a week, we get all these credits. So basically, I was, like, caught up on my credits. I was actually graduating early with a diploma, but the only thing is, we were doing Casey prep. This is when they had Casey, and I didn't do so well.
What's Casey?
Basically, you need to, like, pass the writing, English, and math to graduate with your diploma.
Okay.
And so I didn't do so well on the math, and I didn't do so well on the writing. And my teacher, because it's like, there's a lot of students, but there's also, like, a lot of, like, there's a teacher, and then there's, like, all these different type of, like, helpers in the classroom. So basically, I had, like, two other people in my group, and I had one person just helping us out, and she was actually, like, really trying to help me get it. And she was, like, trying to motivate me, saying, like, I'm almost there. I think I needed, like, 10 more credits, and then I can graduate. But I wasn't going to graduate if I didn't pass those Caseys.
Okay.
So I guess she talked to the teacher, and the teacher was, like, paying attention more, working with me more. And then they decided that they wanted to have a meeting with, like, I had, like, a support team.
Yep.
I think it was, like, a therapist, somebody from education, you know, just, like, a whole little support team, and they said that they think that I should get tested. They don't know exactly what's going on, but at this time I was not goofing off. So there's like, it can't be like, you know, goofing off, and I wasn't getting in trouble back at the unit. I was actually like trying to work. So I came in 1 week and they told me the plan, and you know, I got tested. It took a while, and then it came back that I do have dyslexia. And then like they said something else, like basically not the way I receive information, but like I forgot. Basically, it was a lot.
What how did it feel to you when you got that message that, well, hey, we found that you have dyslexia? What did that mean to you at that point?
I didn't understand what that meant. I really didn't.
Fair.
I didn't understand anything that was going on, but I know that like the teacher like broke it down to me a little bit. He was just telling me like, I'm not like dumb. It's just going to take a little bit more time for me to like, you know, get things and like how I process things and just things like that. But he said, you're very smart, you know, and it's just everybody's different. Everybody learns different. And so with that, he started like a plan that, you know, I was going to get a little bit extra time to like complete my assignments. And then like, I think we tried taking me to like a separate room to like, you know, just do my tests.
Did anybody, so with that, with the diagnosis of dyslexia, did anybody go back and try to help you learn more basic things about how to read?
At that point, I think we didn't go backwards. We just moved forward. So it's whatever, like what was in front of me. And I know that by then when we caught it, they already took the KC out. Like they came a couple weeks later and said, I guess California took the KC exam out. So we no longer need that to graduate. We just need our credits. Mm-hmm. And by then I was already graduated then. So they had my diploma ready, but I was taking college courses at Ventura College while I was incarcerated. So it just helped me prepare for, you know, when I was going to college.
And you have your associate's degree, right? You graduated with your associate. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's some resilience there, I think. Kareem. I'm back at you.
Man. Whoo. All right. Well, let me ask Elijah a couple questions first before I
Please
get my two cents. Hey man, I remember we did a video earlier, long time ago, me and you one on one, we was talking about this stuff. And you were telling that you really did the teachers know how to help you learn how to read when you were in elementary school?
No.
So what were they doing? How were they trying to do it? What was the disconnect?
It wasn't. They were just basically saying I was being defiant in a different way or like goofing off, and they just passed me along. Mm.
Did anybody teach you how to sound out words?
Yeah, I think in the beginning, yes.
In the beginning. Okay, so you learned how to break it down piece by piece while you were, when did that happen? When you were in early elementary school? Mm-hmm. So you learned about syllables and stuff like that? Okay. Did you get good at it? Were you good at breaking things down in syllables and stuff?
No.
No?
And then that's what they were saying. They were saying because, like, I missed a lot of school, hopping around house to house, just like, being there for like a week and then not showing up for a couple of days or a week, they saying that I was like missing out on my lessons and assignments and things like that. So that's why they were saying that I'm not that I'm not applying myself earlier then. They were blaming it on what was going on at home. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I know the school district that he was in, and I actually know the principal who he had. She was in our program. That I was the executive director of the program. And so I know the curriculum they were using, and it was the same curriculum that Margo's folks were using. It was a balanced literacy curriculum. And it's interesting to hear him say that, you know, they tried to give him the basics, and then later on not have the basics. So I'm wondering if your behavior wasn't that bad, is what you told me. You said your behavior wasn't that bad initially. And they were trying to give you the basics. Where was the gap? What I remember you telling me one time you used to try to guess the words to make people happy. You remember that? What was that about?
Because my brother was reading. I got a brother that's like 2 years older than me. And like, I'm not going to lie, I used to feel like everybody used to, if my brother was doing it and he was doing good, they would expect me to do it too. So when we go home, my brother was good in school. He has A's. He loves to read. He was just good at things. And then you have me. I was good at things, but I wasn't like good at reading like him. When we go over your house, Uncle Bar, and then you and Marshawn are working on like reading and math, and just like you're tutoring him, or you guys are just going over stuff, and then you go to me and it's like, it's hard. I can't do it. I'm trying, you know? So, and even with my dad, like, you know, we'd try to read the newspaper and I would guess the words. He would get frustrated. Then I would just shut down. And then like, they would just tell me like, you know, all the words to the songs and you know this and you don't, you know, but you can't read, you know?
And in school, did you try guessing words in school?
Yes. And then I stopped. And I learned that like, it was even more embarrassing.
But when you guessing words, if the word is dog and you don't say dog, I don't understand how guessing even works. What were you doing?
I would guess, like, in my thought process, I see that word all the time. So I would try to like, I don't know, guess. And then they'll be like, oh, you're guessing the word, you know? Like I would not read it, but like, I don't know, if it started with a D, I would assume it's dog. You know, if it's like T, I would say there. You get what I'm saying? Like, just that's how I would like guess.
The teaching strategy that doesn't work, Kareem.
Yeah, well, I mean, oh, Lord have mercy. Elijah, one quick thing. When you were locked up, were a lot of people in there? Did they struggle with this, the reading and everything like that? Or was it just you?
I know it was other people, but I don't think they caught on to it.
But what I'm saying is that when you were incarcerated, did a lot of people struggle to read? Or was it most people could read well when they were in there?
A lot of people wasn't doing the work, so you would never be able to tell. And a lot of people, like, they would stay back. Stay back mean, like, they would stay home from school.
You're talking about going to the school inside the facility?
Yeah. They would stay back. Right. So when I say, like, it's a good majority of us that were inside, but, you know, on my side, there's a couple of people that would go to school still. And then there's some people that, like, they would pass it up. They gave you the option to go to school, basically. So if you're like a middle schooler, high schooler, and say, like, you just didn't feel like going to school today, you could always stay back in the unit.
What about you were telling me about the messages that you guys would try to send and how hard it was to some people.
Oh, yeah. The kites.
The kites. What's a kite?
The kite. A kite is basically like, say like me and Margot are incarcerated. Say I want to like tell her something or like, you know, I'm locked down. I can't. Like, you know?
Yep.
So I would, like, take a little piece of paper, right? Basically, on the piece of paper, roll it up into a kite, and then either I would pass it through, like, another inmate or pass it through the food or, like, fish it under her door so where she could get it, and then she would read it, write me back, and do the same thing. It's just basically, like, text messaging or email or, you know, mailing something instantly.
And people's ability to read those things?
Or write them?
Honestly, writing and reading, it was horrible. So, like, basically, instead of putting S-E-E, we would put C and then U. You know, like, we would just, like, kind of, like, dumb it down a little bit.
Wow.
It worked, but, you know. Then when you go into school, you're, like, writing like that, you know?
Yep.
It took me a while to like write things out and like, you know, just change from being institutionalized, it took me like just a lot to adapt to the outside.
It also are sometimes when kids text a lot, a lot of times kids prefer to text because it's a workaround for having to write. They don't do emails because they don't read too well. So they just text in code just the same way they do in prison with the kites and the, you know, the letters and the changes. And that's the workaround that kids do. That's why texting a lot of times is so popular. Am I wrong, y'all?
No, because I'm not going to lie. So I work actually as an assistant manager, and I have to like respond to emails. And majority of the time, I don't respond. Like, I let my manager do it. And if I have to respond, it's going to take me a while because I have to really sit and write it out and like make it make sense to myself. Because I made a couple mistakes and just like I would basically email as I'm like I'm texting, you know, just didn't look professional. So I'm learning.
Well, they're two very different stories here, but yet they're but yet they're not.
Yeah, there's some similarities in there.
Yeah.
The strategy that people, that 3Q-ing, guessing is a strategy. It's almost like a workaround when you don't know what to do.
That's right.
And unfortunately, we actually been teaching that as a strategy to read. That's what people do when they don't know what to do. I mean, you can hear Elijah say it, but at the end of the day, if you can't read it, you can't read it. Man, and I know some of the teachers he had. I know they're great people. I know some of them personally. Some of them went through our program. And you have the materials that you're being given, and it teaches you that. You teach the kids that.
That's right.
So he may or may not remember how it all went down, but you actually, the teachers, the schools are promoting different methods that really are more like workaround strategies. And it becomes, you know, the norm, and we don't think anything of it, not realizing that there's a group of kids who, the majority of kids, that's not going to work for them. And then it's a matter of what other opportunities and services can you provide them. But it kills me, nephew, to hear that you had to wait to get locked up to learn how to read, man. I mean, to read, you know, decently. As a family, you know, same way I told Margo, I'm sorry, I feel like I owe you an apology too, man. You know, even as your uncle, because y'all was living with us for a while. Well, live with me for a while. Once, you know, once my wife split, my ex-wife split, and took our oldest daughter, Zena, y'all moved in, you know, and I enjoyed being with y'all. I enjoyed watching y'all. I enjoyed, you know, Marshawn play for the Richmond Steelers and you doing this and doing that. And I enjoyed all that. But hindsight is, you know, my job as an adult, even though I'm the uncle, not the father, but my main job is to make sure y'all are all right. And, I think I wasn't on point. I should have been on point. You know, I'm one of the people that could kick my brother. I'm the education guy in the family. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I'm the guy that went to college and did all this type of stuff. I'm the teacher and the principal and all this. So, you know, I don't even know what to say. I'm sorry that you had to go through that and that you didn't have people to sound the alarm sooner than you being locked up, you know, to get tested then and learn how to read then and get your AA then. It shouldn't take all that for a kid to get what they need. It shouldn't take having to go to jail to get what you need to learn how to read. That's the bottom line of it.
How's that? How's that make you feel, Elijah? Not to put you on the spot there, huh? You know, I want to say something to both of you, Margo and Elijah, and that's like your resilience. First of all, your courage to be able to come out and tell your story. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just commendable. Like from the bottom of my heart, people need to hear this. I hope that we can get this message to kids that they can know that maybe there's ways that you can ask for help. But the other thing is that it's not your fault. And the education system failed both of you at some level. And we hope that the work that we're doing, the work that Kareem is doing, starts to uncover some of that, to say our job as educators is to teach all kids how to read. And when they're struggling to do that, to identify that early and get them the help that they need. So we're not talking about taking softball and art away from a kid that we think isn't working hard enough, or another kid ends up in prison and gets diagnosed there. So I just want to say that this is not your fault. And kudos to both of you for being resilient and working through all of that. The other thing that I'm really curious about is your cousins. When you're hearing each other's story, how does that make you feel to hear each other's story? Margo?
It makes me kind of sad. I've heard it before because I know Dad likes to talk about it all the time. And then I've heard Elijah also say it. So it's nothing new to me, but it makes me sad that like somebody so close to me, one of my own family members, had to go through that as well. It's just tough. It's like it's a little uncomfortable to hear, honestly, but it's the truth. So,
yeah. Elijah, how about you? When you heard Marco's story, what went through your mind?
I went back and basically thought about how I felt when I went through it. So I was like kind of feeling like, man, I wish I would have known this sooner and I could like, you know, help her out. Not help her out, but like support her and like let her know she's not alone. And that, you know, things happen. Mm-hmm. Things happen and, you know. But now I'm proud because she's doing great. She's doing great. And you wouldn't even like really see that from her. You get what I'm saying? Like you wouldn't know all the challenges because it doesn't show. And it's the, how do you say, the determination and her just persevering through things. So I'm proud. I'm a proud cousin.
Wow, that's awesome. Makes me a little teary-eyed. I'm sorry about that. What about messages to your families? Margo, go ahead, or Elijah, any messages that you have for your families about your experiences or anything you want them to know?
It sucked. it really sucked. Wouldn't do it again. Wouldn't recommend. But, you know, I've made it. I feel like I've popped out on the other side where I'm starting to. And I think as a kid, I just needed more understanding from people and more grace. Like help would have been nice, but I think understanding and grace from the adults would have been amazing. But now that I'm here and I'm going to college and I'm surrounded by people who surprisingly have gone through similar experiences as well, like my classmates and some of my teachers at Bowie State, it feels like a little close-knit community, so I'm going to be okay. I believe I'm going to be okay, but yeah, I'm going to be okay.
You know, thanks for your honesty. It sucked is probably the best way to describe that. So, oh man, how about you, Elijah? Any messages to your families?
We just got to do better and pay more attention, you know, and for those of my family members on all sides that are struggling with things, you just can't beat yourself up. You know, when there's a will, there's a way. And, you know, if we don't know, we're going to figure it out, but it's a together thing. So, you know, we just got to pay more attention because there could be more things that we're struggling with. And we don't even know that it's a real thing, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah, that's really wise. And I mean, I'm sitting here and thinking, Kareem, you know, this isn't your fault either. And, you know, we're giving kudos to these young people for being vulnerable and resilient and being willing to share their story. But same to you, Kareem, for being vulnerable in so many ways on this podcast, not just this one, but previous ones too, being vulnerable, being resilient, and being willing to share the story as well.
I appreciate that, and I disagree with you. You know, I've come to terms with this. You know, as parents, we got one job. It's not to make the most money. It's not to get the highest degrees. It's not to get the biggest house. It's this. We got one job, and it's to make sure these kids is all right. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I come from, you know, my legacy, my family. Well, you do whatever you can to support your kids, no matter what your job is, or, you know, how much money you got. I don't care how, you know. And so I think we just get so distracted, so busy doing stuff and so busy living life. You know, I could say my brother, whom I love, I only have one blood brother. You know, we both had to take an L on this one. We, you know, what were we doing? We were so busy chasing our goals, dreams, our jobs, our careers, whatever it was. I think we got to be honest and say that we got one job, and it's to make sure these babies are all right. And if they can't read, they're not going to be all right. I mean, you can make it, but it's going to be tough. Yeah. And we got caught slipping, and they had to deal with the aftermath. And I could run from that. I could dress it up and try to make it feel better and look better. But if this is going to be worth anything to anybody, man, you got one job. And that's why when the school come, you know, we tried to get Margo tested fourth grade, all the way up. We kept getting a runaround. You know, mm-hmm. Elijah, the stuff he was going through, the family was busy doing this and that, and they moving all the time. And now he's falling behind because of all of this on top of whatever. You know, could those same things have happened differently? Could we have waited to the summer to move? Not in the middle of the school year? Could I have not worked the second job for what? To buy some things? Some things? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I'm out there working two and three jobs. Teaching is just one job. I'm working UPS and Pizza Hut delivery and all that. Did I have to do all that? I just think sometimes if we're going to be honest, we got to tighten up. And I'm not just talking to people that look like me. I'm talking to everybody. So I appreciate what you say, and I take that to heart. I'm not beating myself up over it anymore, but I know doggone sure if I had to do it over again. I'm just hoping that my hindsight is somebody else's foresight. You know, even if you put them in preschool, even if you have money in your pocket. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that testing, the schools didn't test either one of these kids, these young people. We had to come out the pocket to pay for Margo. I don't know if you know this, baby girl, but we had to pass a hat around to get the money, you know, Poppy, Nana, Grammy, me, your mom. We had to come together to get the money. I mean, testing is expensive. We wouldn't roll like that. It costs a lot of bread to do that. And so, you know, but what I say to parents is, if anything's worth getting a second job, it's that. It's not worth getting a second job so you can buy a nicer car or something. But to get your kid tested for this type of stuff, it shouldn't have to be. But if that's something that's worth it. And then for Elijah, you know, man, I just, I appreciate your perseverance. You know, I was worried, nephew. I ain't gonna lie. I was worried. It spirals quickly. Quickly, when a kid can't read and life gets a hold of you, it's like a cycle. Mm-hmm. Next thing you know, you find yourself in situations that you never would have imagined.
Right.
I'm not blaming you, nephew. I'm just saying, like, it can spiral. Even Margo, she was getting depressed and all that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. We as a society gotta have more of a focus. But us as parents, and I also will say this, if I may, which is, I'm an educator. I mean, I'm like an educator's educator. And I know my brother, he's not an educator. That's not his jam. And so there were times where he would ask me to come to the school for the IEP meetings, the special ed stuff, like the meetings with the people, because it's so intimidating.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm coming to talk that talk. You know, all the acronyms and this and that and all this type of stuff. But most parents are overwhelmed.
That's right.
And they need an ally in the building. They need somebody to just say, hey, hold on. Stop the games. Stop the cap. She mm-hmm. needs to be tested. He needs to be tested. Let's not get him to run around. Let's figure out what we can do. And let's look at how we're teaching. I know I've brought up on the balanced literacy. I understand I'm using units of stuff, whatever. I get all that. And man, I'm looking at these kids and they don't even have a chance. Mm-hmm. What am I going to do? That's an ethical question.
Right.
That's an ethical question. So, you know, I have a lot of thoughts swirling. I love them both. I hope that somebody benefits from this.
Yeah.
Let me just ask a question if you don't mind, or it may just go by the wayside, but I just actually want to know two things. Do you all have any advice for teachers who are trying to do the best they can to teach kids how to read? How can they make sure that they get to everybody, that they don't skip anybody, and that they don't end up, you know, having students with situations that get out of hand because they can't read? Do you have any advice of what they should focus on or how they should approach it? Any strategies, anything not to do, anything to do? You got any from your experiences, anything that worked better than other things or you might want to speak on?
I mean, for me, I liked one-on-one talking with teachers because for the past, especially in high school, they'd always ask in group settings. And then as soon as class end, we dip and I wouldn't really get to talk to the teacher. And I don't really want to share my business in front of all the other students because that's kind of embarrassing.
Yeah.
So I think pulling students aside, forcing them to come and talk to you, because me, I'm not just going to voluntarily come up to the teacher and be like, hey, by the way, this is happening with me. I mean, I will, but it's going to take longer. So I think if the teacher's like, hey, I've noticed this, that, and the other with you, let's talk about it. And then you talk with the student. But also just being patient with people. Patience. I can't stress that enough. Just patience with just students, please. Yeah.
That's good.
Elijah, you have anything in terms of how to teach kids to read or anything that they should know?
Same thing Margo said, just patience, actually doing, checking in with everybody personally, like whether it's before class, after class, during class, you know, just like seeing, you know, they need help, taking time. Don't just like, you know, I know the teachers be ready for school to end just like the students, but like, you know, stretching yourself a little bit, take that 2 hours after school to like, you know, talk to certain kids, not just certain kids, but like every kid. But if you talk to a good majority of kids, like when, you know, they're doing their work during the class, you could talk to a couple, have a couple stay after school or like, you know, just pick. Yeah. But don't just treat every child the same. It's like when you're raising kids, every child is different. Just because the oldest may learn at a faster pace and, you know, got everything, you know, set, you might have to take a little bit of time with the middle child or the younger child, you know, just like, you know, just pay attention, treat them like you would treat your kids, you know?
Do you think that the way you were being taught to read in school, I'm talking about in elementary school, do you think, I don't know, is there anything you want to say about that? Lambert, you might help me with this. I'm thinking about it. There's a question there. I'm curious about what you thought about the way they were teaching you how to read. Do you remember it? Is anything stick out in your mind?
Yeah, they was like teaching everybody the same and expecting the same end result.
But how were they teaching it though? What was it going on that wasn't working for you?
So I don't know, like what my classmates did before, you know, like say, I don't know what they did before first grade. Right. I don't know what type of like academies, preschools they went to. I don't know if their parents were homeschooling them, but some of my classmates already came to the class, you know, kind of like knowing and learning. And I think the teachers, no, I don't think I know, the teachers like basically, like, oh, okay, I got this person and this person, and like a good majority of classroom was already like reading and writing a little bit and sounding out words and stuff. So they just expected like everybody to be doing it. So they just went with like the flow, you
but
know,
they didn't
instead of like, you know, even if those kids do know how to sound things out and read a little bit, you still got to like go to like, you know, square one, sounding words out, you know, like everybody learned at the same pace. It's cool that like those kids have a head start, you know, but you can't just like, oh, okay, they know what they're doing. You should know how to do this. And, oh, okay, we're going to, you know.
So you always felt behind then. You always felt like you were behind.
You said a lot right there. So yeah. if some kids knew how to sound out words because they learned it at home or whatever, preschool, and you didn't know how to sound out words, did they, like, I would think in kindergarten or first grade that would be like the main thing. We're going to teach y'all how to sound these words out, these sounds, make these words, put it together, make sentences and all that. Was that like, if they wasn't doing that, what were they doing?
Writing, tracing, just moving forward. Moving forward. And I don't know what they were doing on the days that I wasn't there, but the days that I was there, like, that's what we were doing.
So you don't remember anybody teaching you the sounds and letters and or any of anything?
Some of the schools, I went to school up in like Newark before, and I remember out there they were teaching like basically the A, E, I, O, U, like the syllables, just things like that. They was having us like clap, but it wasn't like, say every day we doing the same thing, basically like apple, like, you get what I'm saying? Like we're focusing on the same word. Mm-hmm. So now those words are stuck in my head. I know what it looks like because we didn't clapped it out. We didn't sounded it out. They didn't wrote it down. We didn't traced it. You get what I'm saying? Yeah. So if we working on that for a good 2 weeks, a good 6-7 words. Oh yeah, I got those words down. So if I see those words in the newspaper, I know that is apple. You get what I'm saying?
Well, why didn't they? But they didn't do that with more words. Like, I would think if it's working, then just keep going with it. I don't understand. So what, they didn't just keep going with that?
I don't know why.
I'm guessing, Kareem, they didn't generalize those sound spelling patterns. They just looked at
It was just like the basic words, like, you know, and from there, they just assume that everybody should get the idea. Like now I understand the concept, like sounding words out and clapping the syllables. Mm-hmm. But like when you're a little kid like that, it's like you got to keep repeating yourself. You got to start like using that with like everything, you know, whether it's yellow, brown, you know, like you have to continuously do that. You can't just like expect us to do it for everything else after you didn't taught us, you know, those 5, 6, 7 words.
That's huge. That's huge. I mean, if we start with things that work and just do it in a systematic way to make sure we get those patterns, we get the knowledge and the understanding and build the skill, as opposed to, well, we did it for the vocabulary list this week, but that's it.
Come on, man.
Oh, I feel like it was right there. It was right there for them. Right there. They just had to keep going with it. Oh.
Or for the alphabet card, right? That's what it makes me think about, is like A is for apple. And so it's on that alphabet card on the wall, but you never got to break that thing apart.
Margo, do you have any advice for kids? I mean, we talked about teachers. But what about kids and parents? Well, actually, both of y'all, do you have any advice for students and or parents who might be struggling in school, learning how to read or whatever's going on? What would you say to them? Because they might hear this and, you know, they may not know what to do or what's happening. What would y'all have any advice for kids and parents?
I mean, I feel very repetitive, but I just wish somebody really kind of sat with me and told me that I wasn't stupid and that I was okay. Because, like, you're going to struggle in school. That's just what it is. School's not easy, period. And it's even harder when you have dyslexia or if you have an attention problem or a behavior issue. It's going to be even harder. But I think you just got to keep pushing, really. And you are no less important than somebody who doesn't have it. If anything, you might be a little more special when it comes to certain situations, but you're not dumb, you're not slow, you just learn differently, and that's okay. And so you just got to work just a little harder, even if you are working really, really hard already, you just got to work even harder.
Elijah, you got any advice for the parents? If a kid is struggling to read or what have you, or even before they start to struggle, what would you say to the parents?
It's okay not to know what to do, but, you know, just ask a bunch of questions to, like, you know, other facilitators or like teachers or look into a program, like, you know, programs like outside of school to help with school. Mm-hmm. Like, because sometimes parents, they don't know what to do because, you know, they're not used to it or that's not how they were brought up, you know? So I can say sometimes they get frustrated with the child or with their self or both, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So just try to, like, take a deep breath and ask questions. No question is a good question.
That's so wise. That is so wise. It's okay not to know what to do. Just ask some questions. Because, you know, y'all don't come with a manual.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things Margot said earlier was the advice, she said, understanding and grace.
Yep.
I almost fell out my chair when she said that. There has to be a level of understanding and grace that when people are struggling, they don't want to struggle, first of all.
Right.
But that goes to teachers, too. You got to be gracious towards your teachers who are probably doing the best they can, but may not know what to do. Yeah. And they may have materials that don't even, like you said, Elijah, sound it out and all this. They may not even have that kind of stuff. They may have different kinds of materials. Okay. So, you know, having understanding and grace, but a commitment to figure it out. That's the main thing. Okay. I don't know what to do, but we're going to figure this out.
Right.
You know, this ain't working. So let's see what we can do. I think that's the attitude that folks got to have. So yeah, I'm glad y'all mentioned that because I think it's really important.
That's good. Great questions. Thanks, Kareem.
You got it.
Take my job. Go ahead. we always love having Kareem on. So just so you all know that I'm a big Kareem Weaver fan. And so since I'm a big Kareem Weaver fan, I'm also a big Margo and Elijah fan too. So.
There you go. See, y'all got a fan club now.
That's right.
I love you guys. I'm grateful for you sharing your stories. Hopefully, is there some other parent out there recognize one? Look, if your kid is not getting it, don't wait.
Good advice.
Don't wait. That's the hustle that you know, oh, let's give them more time. Nah. Don't give them more time. You need to go up there and see about your child. I'm just telling you, learn from my mistake. Yep. But to the kids, you know, well, y'all not kids anymore. I'm just grateful that y'all didn't give up. And I'm real proud of y'all. Thank y'all for doing this.
You know, I'm just going to echo what Kareem said, but I'd love to end. You guys are doing so great, right? Like the resilience, you have hope in your voices, you have excitement, you have things to look forward to. Margo, what's your next big goal? What's your next big hope for yourself?
My next big hope? I don't know. I think the only thing that I'm really hopeful for right now is doing good in my first year of college. That's what I'm really focused on, if I'm being honest. Like, I love art, I love softball, but my goal for the end of college is to be decked in gold personally with my tassels and my little ribbons. Yeah, that's my goal. So this first year is really me just focusing on my work and kind of getting out of my shell and making my own friends and networking. I'm excited for that. I really am.
That's great. You sound excited. And I know you're going to do great. Elijah, what about you? What's your hope? Your next big hope?
Honestly, I don't know. I'm just taking it a day at a time. I do want to go back to school, but like next year, I don't know what I want to do yet. So that's why I'm like not acting on it because I'm still trying to think things out, you know?
That's cool.
I don't know what direction I'm headed right now. I work like 100+ hours.
One day at a time and staying focused is a great thing. That's awesome.
Staying out of trouble.
That's awesome. Well, this has been such an honor for me and such a treat. Thank you for sharing your stories, Kareem. Thank you for your, just thank you for you and your commentary and coming along on the journey with us. So we appreciate all of your time.
It's my pleasure. I'm sorry we ran out of time. I had a couple more questions for y'all, but listen, I appreciate y'all making the time to join. I've been on this thing a couple times, but it's always good to hear from, you know, from young people who out there trying to make their way. So I appreciate both y'all and you too. Sister Lambert, I appreciate you too.
Yeah. Thanks, Elijah and Margo.
No problem. Thank you for having us.
It was good being here with you guys.
Thanks so much for listening to this special Dyslexia Awareness Month episode of Science of Reading the Podcast, featuring Elijah, Margo, and Kareem Weaver. Check out the show notes for more information on Kareem's organization, Fulcrum. Full and complete reading is a universal mandate. We'll also have links to some of our recent episodes that go deep into the research on dyslexia. Let us know what you thought of this episode in our Facebook discussion group, Science of Reading the Community. Science of Reading the Podcast is brought to you by Amplify. For more information on how Amplify leverages the science of reading, go to amplify.com/CKLA. Next week, we're launching Season 8 of the podcast. This season will be focused on the importance of knowledge and knowledge building. We hope you'll enjoy this sneak peek of what's to come.
Really, that's our legacy to them as the world's knowledge about the things that have happened and the world that we live in. It's their birthright.
I like to think about vocabulary not as individual words, but as a set of labels for ideas.
Read alouds really are the way to build language comprehension. And just as they are so effective when we think about sort of the typical early childhood experience of a read aloud, a teacher in a rocking chair, those benefits continue in upper elementary school as well as middle school.
Not all students have equal opportunities to visit museums, science centers, all of those things that we know create unevenness, even within one classroom, let alone between schools.
That's just some of what's ahead on Season 8, launching next week. Thanks so much for listening.